Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, and you're very welcome to this week's Tillage Podcast. I'm Siobhan Walsh, recording on Wednesday, the 25th of January this week for your reference later on when we get to grain prices and weather. On this week's show, we hear from the Chagas National Tillage Conference. BYDV, fungicides and blackgrass are all on the agenda there. We also talk to a clear man about soil health, tell you what's in this week's paper, of course, and that includes some developments on noxious weeds. And of course, then at the end, we have grain markets and the weather reports as well. First up, look, there was a great buzz at the Tillage Conference today. I'm home from it now and there was a good crowd, people chatting, people meeting, people glad to be out and about. And, you know, if we wanted to in the tillage sector at the minute, we could be very down about prices and fertiliser and grain, whatever it may be. But I think farmers are ready for the year ahead. They're looking at a bit of dry weather in the forecast as well. And they're looking on the bright side. And on that note, we spoke to Ewan Mullins, and Ewan is the head of crops research at Chagas Oak Park. And here's what Ewan had to say. Ewan, a great conference today, a big attendance. And I think what I noticed about it was there's a very positive attitude in the room about tillage at the minute. And that started from the opening of the conference with Chagas director Frank O'Mara.
Yeah, I mean, our director made it very clear, like, Chagas is fully behind the tillage sector. There is a future in tillage, but let's not cut ourselves. There's huge challenges out there. And we spent a lot of the day talking about integrated strategies. There's no perfect solution, but the idea is that all these strategies, bit by bit, will start to build IPM systems out past 2030.
And investment going in from Chagas as well. We heard figures there today of 750,000 being spent, and there's a new maltings facility in Oak Park as well. There's loads of stuff, good stuff going on.
There is. I mean, like, we have to have the facilities first, and the facilities attract the expertise, and that's the model that's used in research institutes around the world. That's what we set about 2.5 years ago. We put down a strategy. This is the equipment we needed. The malting hub is obviously one part of it. All the diagnostic equipment, that has to be up to speed. And because of that, then we had the excellent presentations today from our PhD students who were able to use that equipment, which is a fantastic skill to learn. It upskills them for future employment, but it also really gives us the insight we need into these diseases. And, you know, we talked about the added value options that are there for the sector. Projects such as U-Protein and ValproPat, all these projects will come together to hopefully build opportunities for the sector.
Yeah, something very important that we heard of and what farmers have been calling for is an impact assessment of the SUR, and that's going to happen now from Chagas as well.
It is, yeah. Stephen Kilday is leading that project, IPM 2030. That's absolutely essential. Like, the SUR is not going anywhere. It's that legal framework to build a roadmap out to farm to fork. But there's an awful lot of unanswered questions. Yeah. So to be fair, the department put out a policy focus call, funding call, It's funded by the department, and this is a two-year project, but it's not wait until 2 years. The idea is that we will start to feed out results that we get through that study. Once we get them nailed down in the next 6 to 12 months, the plan is to start to inform stakeholders through the project rather than wait till the very end.
That's really important because it'll inform the policy as well. Gene editing unit, it's not something that was talked about today, but it's something that you're working on the whole time. Where does that fit in tillage today, or where will it fit in, or could it fit in?
So it's gene editing is a technique. Precision breeding is another term for it. And it is basically a breeding technique. And breeding techniques, they evolve and appear over time. Right now, there are no varieties available that have been edited. Across Europe and across the world, there is material being developed through editing. What it does is it allows researchers and breeders to take an existing variety and enhance its agronomic performance or its quality or a trait that will add profit for the farmer or sustainability for the environment. Where is it going to fit into Europe? That's the big question. The European Commission has made it clear that current regulations are not fit for purpose. That's their using their language. And they have started a process to look at the current regulation and to look at the current framework. And my understanding is that there will be policy, a draft next steps in 2023. But we have to be aware that Europe is the key importance for Europe is food safety, and that has stood the test of time in Europe for the last 20-30 years, and that has to be the key principle.
Well, Ewan, thanks very much. It's been a great day, and we look forward to the open day, of course, in Oak Park in June as well. I know it's a long time away,
Wednesday, June 21st.
Very good.
Look
thanks,
forward
Ewan.
To it. Thanks, Siobhan.
And in the news pages of the paper this week, we have a report from Frank O'Mara. Frank, the Chagas director, opened the conference on Wednesday. And look, Frank was very positive on tillage, and it was great to see. Also on the news pages, Minister McConlogue, there was big news this week. So Minister McConlogue, he spoke at the Irish Green Growers Group's AGM on Monday, and he announced that he's working to make blackgrass a noxious weed. It's great news. We brought this to light in June in the Irish Farmers Journal. And look, making blackgrass a noxious weed isn't going to get rid of the problem, and farmers have to be the solution to that problem as well, and you know, step up in the fight against blackgrass. But it's certainly something that's going to help along the way. Maybe allows a bit more intervention where there isn't anything happening. And look, I know people will say there's noxious weeds all over the country. There's wild oats and there's ragwort. But at the same time, if someone knows they have ragwort on the farm, they know that they're not meant to have it on the farm as well. So hopefully it will just help. It'll help in some way to fight against blackgrass. There's more online from that Irish Grain Growers Group's AGM. They had a few speakers beforehand. Ewan Mullins from Chagas, Sinead Morris as well from Carlow IT, or Southeast Technological University, I should say. And look, there's a bit more online there from that meeting. Now, next up from the Tillage Conference, Louise McNamara has some advice on how to tackle barley yellow dwarf virus. Louise McNamara, you're a researcher in Oak Park, and of course you're working on BYDV, so such a topical subject for farmers. You might just explain a few things that you said today at the Tillage Conference. So the aphids, first of all, I suppose, that are affecting BYDV.
Yeah, so I talked about how there's 25 different aphids that can actually spread BYDV, but we're interested in the major vectors. And there's three of them, so it's the grain aphid, the bird cherry oaf aphid, and the rose grain aphid. And what I did today was I gave an update on resistance status in those aphids, and also management options for them with the limited chemistry that we now have, changing climate, and the resistance development in the grain aphid.
Yeah. So Louise, as we go into the springtime then, you know, people are going to be planting spring cereals. What's the advice for people now planting those crops in the next few months?
So the advice, as always, is to take advantage of all the IPM strategies you have available to you. So the same as in winter, the first thing you can do is think about your planting date. So in the winter, it would be late planting, and in the spring would be early planting. So if you plant a bit earlier, the idea is the weather would be cooler and the aphids would be less active, because you want to get your crop as advanced as possible before the aphids are active. So aphids get very active kind of above 12, 14 degrees, so you're hoping to get as far towards growth stage 31 as you can, before that happens. So that's your first port call.
Yeah.
Then another option for your control is if you're those later planted cereals, so kind of like mid-April planted, you might want to think about an insecticide. And in light of trying to prevent further development of insecticide resistance, we only want to use the minimum amount of insecticides that we have to. So what's recommended currently is a single spray at growth stage 14 for April sown, but not to spray March sown because generally it's not needed.
Yeah, so that advice is still there. Don't sow if you plant in March. And on the winter cereals then, there is some of those tolerant varieties. Is there more of that coming down the line?
Yeah, so in barley currently there's only tolerant varieties available and kind of coming down the line, but in winter there is some resistance that is available or coming, and hopefully in the future we get more of those available, because that's going to be a really important tool as we aim to reduce our pesticides, because it's inbuilt control in the field all the time.
Yeah. And Louise, then you're doing work on a decision support system and gathering data, so just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we're working on a couple of different aspects for decision support tools. So I guess what decision support tools' role is to help you work out what the risk is. So if the risk is low, you know you might not need your pesticides, and the risk is higher, you may choose to apply a pesticide. So what we're doing is we're working with ADAS, testing a decision support tool called Acrobat that they've developed for Ireland. Whether that will work here, we'll have to see, because the main aphid in the UK where it was developed is actually different to the main aphid here. So we'll have to see if it works here, and we'll be testing them in tramline trials and plot trials.
Yeah.
And then also we're looking at different monitoring methods for decision support tools. So using like yellow trapping, visual searching in the field and suction towers, to see if any of those monitoring methods are a good way of determining risk in your crop.
Okay. That's great to hear that work going on, Louise. And I know people are really interested to see it. So keep up the good work. Thanks, Mel. And thanks to Louise for taking the time to chat to us there. Next up is Stephen Kilday, and Stephen has an update on fungicide management, and also Stephen is starting a new project, and it's looking at an impact assessment basically on the implications of the new sustainable use of pesticides regulations. And look, that's going to be an ongoing thing, and he said he hopes to have a report by the next Tillage conference on the first year of it, and it will continue on then as the years go by. So here's what Stephen had to say. Stephen, you just gave a presentation there at the Tillage conference, and I suppose, you know, in some ways nothing different. We're still talking about resistance, but we have new chemistry there now, and you're telling us about some of the sensitivities that chemistry has.
Yep. Indeed, I suppose the thing is, when the fungicide disease control programs have significantly changed since 2020, we've lost chlorothalonil, and we've got two new actives, Revisol, which is an azole from BASF, and Inatrek, which is a QIA, a completely new mode of action to cereals from Corteva. And we've been, over the last number of years, we've been sort of establishing baselines so that we have the data there to monitor the septoria population to these chemistries. And that's what I would have presented today, is what the sensitivity profile of the Irish population was before these molecules came onto the market.
Yeah. And so there is sensitivity there to some of those new chemistries. So how big of a problem is that? And I suppose, what can growers do to stop that problem developing or slow down the development?
Yeah, I suppose it's natural that there's going to be a range of sensitivity, because it's a sort of a living beast or an organism, so there will be some range there. Fortunately, what we see is, and with the Inatrek, that range is quite narrow. It's what we'd expect from a new mode of action.
Yeah.
And what we can see in the glasshouse in terms of the range of sensitivity is that in the current range, the molecule is working quite well and quite effective. In with Revisol, then we have a wider range, which isn't surprising in itself, because it is an azole. We've been using azoles for the last 40 years. In the glasshouse, yes, the strains that are less sensitive, or those that are most less sensitive, are that little bit more difficult to control. So what consequences does this have on control or our strategies? I think it's sort of a warning shot to say that we need to mind these chemistries.
Mm.
Although we have this very narrow range for Inatrek and the QIAs, we know that it may develop a mutation that basically knocks it out. So it isn't the case that it's all perfectly fine. We still need to manage it. And similarly with Revisol, we do need to manage and maintain that range of sensitivity that we have. We don't want to push it further to the right or into a higher bracket. Yeah. How can we manage it then? I think the key is actually about the amount of times we use it and the dose that we use it at.
Yeah.
We need to minimise the amount of exposure. They are very good actives. They provide very good control, but we do need to protect them. And that does look at resistance management strategies. As I say, it's the dose that we put out and also what we put out with them. They do need to be mixed with additional modes of action, including the multi-site.
Yeah. And the rate for that multi-site then, Stephen, how important is it that rate?
Yeah, so we need, when we include a multi-site, we want it to actually be providing disease control. It has to provide disease control to be providing that protection to the other molecules. So from a multi-site perspective, we'd be looking at, say, a fulpit. We do see that actually we should be using it at a full rate and applying it twice. The critical sort of timings, that's leaf tree and that's the flag leaf in wheat.
Yeah, okay, so that's really important for people to remember. Stephen, you also talked about the Sustainable Use Directive, the Sustainable Use Pesticides Regulations. It has a new name now. That's to come in 2024. It's currently a consultation on, but Chagas are doing an impact assessment. So you might tell us what you're going to do in that.
Yes, indeed. Look, as you say, it's a change from the directive to the regulation, and within that there's some sort of legally binding sort of objectives that have to be met. And that is such as reducing the amount of pesticides that we're putting out and reducing the amount of more toxic pesticides that we're putting out. Also included are within it to increase the use of IPM and actually to make it a legally binding aspect of crop production. Mm. To aid that, within the regulation, there's scope for the development of crop-specific sort of guidelines. So altogether, what we're going to try and do is actually identify what the key pesticides are used in Ireland, the targets that they're used against, what alternative mechanisms of control are there. They could be as ranging from a variety through to a biological, what's available, what potential impacts in terms of efficacy they may have. And then taken all together, we will be looking at an impact assessment of the overall regulation. What will it have from an economic perspective? It could well be positive or it could well be negative, and we have to address that. But also then from an environmental aspect, because the regulation is coming in for the sustainable use of pesticides, but actually if we move to certain changes in practice, they may actually have a negative impact on the environment, or they could well have a positive, and we have to address that. And sort of that's what the scope and exercise is about.
Yeah, and you're looking at economics in there as well, Stephen.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's reality is, in terms of what is practiced, will all come back down to its effect on efficacy, control of the pest, which will impact economics.
Yeah, great to see that work going on, Stephen. Thanks very much for talking to us.
No problem at all.
Thanks very much to Stephen. And look, part of those IPM measures to reduce our fungicides is picking an appropriate variety for your area, for your farm, for your system. And on the tillage pages this week, we have the recommended lists and for the spring cereals. So we have wheat, barley and oats. And look, the lists are there themselves. And we also run through the varieties as well. So your variety is the first thing you're going to do. It's where you start. So make sure you're going to pick a variety that's going to suit your farm. Don't just look at the yield, look at the straw strength, how much barley you have to cut, look at the earliness of ripening, and of course disease profiles as well. And then what's your final use? Is the grain quality going to match up to that final use as well? Look, that's on the tillage pages this week, so have a look at that. Now, we did mention blackgrass earlier on in the news that the minister is working on making blackgrass a noxious weed. And the final speaker that we have from the tillage conference is John Cussons of NIAB. And look, John has done a lot of work on blackgrass in the UK. He's no stranger to it, and I think you're going to really enjoy this chat. John, you gave a great talk there. You got plenty of questions after from the audience. You were talking about blackgrass and sometimes I think farmers underestimate the problem of blackgrass here in Ireland. But, I mean, you've seen the full extent of it in the UK.
Yeah, I think, if you'd come to cereals in 2012 in the UK, you would have thought it was just the end for us. You know, that you could see that the systems that we'd adopted, high intensity winter cropping, a lack of cultivation, are just broken. But since then, the positive is that we've seen such a fantastic uptake of integrated weed management approaches and messages around integrated weed management that we're really living with the weed in a much more sustainable way now.
Yeah.
And some, like you listed out some of the IPM methods there that people implement, and one thing was delayed drilling, and you mentioned this as well, you know, where people have moved to conservation ag, they're sowing a lot earlier, and we see that in Ireland now too, you know, sowing the middle of September, and that's not good practice on grass weeds.
I think what we see is that your weed management comes from a whole range of things, and you can afford to drill earlier if you've got other elements in the rotation. So yeah. if you're going to move towards mid-till, zero-till, you need to have that rotational diversity to have other parts of the rotation where you've got less seed return and black rot pressure. So in certainly in the UK, those two things, spring cropping and delayed drilling, are the two key things that we've seen adopted. And I think in that transition into conservation agriculture, you go through a process where you are using cover crops, perhaps, or maybe even companion crops.
Yeah.
You can improve the trafficability of the system and open the window up again. So I don't think it's all... The weed management isn't what's stopping you from moving to that system.
Yeah.
But it's very definitely a transition that requires management and thought and an awful lot of experimentation, trial and error.
From your experience, you know, if you're a farmer in Ireland, you discover blackgrass in one of your fields, what should that farmer do? Let's say, you know, they find a plant or they find a few plants together. What's their first port of call, I suppose?
I mean, our experience has been that it's an awful lot easier to have a sustainable system to keep a low population level of blackgrass in check than it is to allow the population to get out of control and then try and come back from that.
Yeah.
So my advice would always be, if you see one or two blackgrass plants, a patch of blackgrass plants, you know, anywhere on the farm, you need to take action now to try not to get into the situation where you're trying to come back from a very high abundance level.
You talked about sustainable glyphosate use, John, and you know, Vijay, before you give some research on the glyphosate, and you know, said that there was reduced sensitivity, no resistance yet, but that's a worry, like, isn't it? So people using glyphosate on their farms for grass weeds, you know, have you any tips to use it to improve their stewardship, I suppose?
Well, I think with glyphosate, the main thing is not to allow the survivors of a glyphosate application to set seed. So it's all about, particularly in a no-till system where you don't have the mechanical weeding, so true direct drill systems, if you spray off pre-drilling a crop and you see surviving plants, whatever the species, either take action directly and dig out those individual plants or challenge those individual plants, or introduce a little bit of mechanical weeding somehow, cultivate. Then the critical thing is that we think about herbicide resistance development as a process, and that in the mind that thinks it's long term and you can afford to make the odd small mistake. Glyphosate resistance looks like it's something which is an event that you put lots of glyphosate on a stubble, you see surviving plants, you drill through, allow those to set seed. It's ratcheted up the sensitivity. So it means for glyphosate in no-till systems, vigilance, monitoring, actually taking action against those survivors is really important.
That's key when it comes to grass weeds, isn't it, John? Vigilance.
Oh, absolutely.
And crops.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been hearing.
Vijay talked about the number of farmers where they surveyed and found blackgrass and the farmer didn't know that there was blackgrass present. I mean, that's an absolute classic example of how, you know, knowing the weeds that you've got on your farm, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I would extend that to say, if you do have grass weeds, you really should be resistance testing to know not just what the species is, but what the sensitivity is.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely critical,
Absolutely. And Vijay gave contact details there. They're testing here in Jagas, farmers should avail of that.
So I know they've got the capacity to take samples of grass weeds, not just grass weeds, but broadleaf weeds.
Yeah.
And that's been the critical thing, that testing, understanding what the challenge is, not just on the species level, but down to the what herbicides work, what herbicides don't.
Thanks very much, John.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks very much to John for that. So look, main message is there is keep blackgrass under control. But if you do have blackgrass, there is solutions to it out there. And look, intervention is key and fast intervention. Okay, we'll move to grain prices now. And there's
grain prices are on the news pages this week, but also, of course, in the back of the paper. So just for your info, at the minute on Wednesday, the Matif wheat price for December 23 closed at 269.75 per tonne. So it's actually up on the close the evening before on Tuesday. But that close on Tuesday was actually down a fiver on the week before. So look, overall, the trend in grain markets is still downwards. Just to give you an idea, look, there's not many buyers in the market at the minute. But, you know, spot prices for barley, for native barley, around 280, 285 for tonne, and then wheat above it. Maize coming into the country, it's moved downwards quite significantly over the last few weeks, and it's at 305 euro per tonne. And just look, going back to those Matif prices and to put the market into a little bit of perspective, you know, that the French nearby mill and wheat price, it's now been reported is at an 11-month low. So that's where we are with the markets. But look, bit of positivity there in the news pages on grain markets as well. So have a read of that. Now, weather, more positivity in the weather report than in the grain prices report. So it looks like there's a bit of dry weather on the way. Any rain that's in the forecast, it's in light rain and drizzle. And there is frost though. So Thursday night looks like we're down to about -2 possible. So look, some of you might have been out spraying. So just make sure you have the antifreeze in the sprayer and keep everything in order. But certainly looks like there might be a bit of drying, and maybe people will get out to do a bit of field work in the next few days, hopefully. Okay, so finally, our last interview for this week. It's actually, I caught up with John O'Loughlin. John works for Grassland Agro, and he was speaking at the Quinn's Tillage Conference. And look, John is really into soil and soil health, and that was the theme of his topic at Quinn's. So we'll have a listen to John now. John O'Loughlin, Grassland Agro. We're here at the Quinn's Conference. Great turnout, first of all, John. Like, tillage is back. There's plenty of people here and in good form.
Yeah, absolutely huge turnout, Siobhan. It's brilliant to see. And it was great interest in all the speakers today as well, which is great. Yeah.
And John, your talk was on soil health. And look, Grassland Agro are going big time into this, and you're working with farmers on it. Just describe a little bit about what you were talking about here tonight.
Yeah, well, firstly, you pulled me up straight away on my presentation because I stole one of your pictures with the soil underpants. And I have been quick to point out that this isn't actually the most scientific test in soil health. But it's absolutely brilliant, I think, Siobhan, that there's a growing interest in soil health and soil biology. And really, we focused on that a lot. I suppose the key thing was that sometimes when you listen to maybe an academic, someone who isn't working with farmers, in their day-to-day, they can go into soil biology and soil health and really focus on how detrimental the plough is, and it kind of maybe alienates the farmers in the crowd a little bit. So I suppose we try to work in the context of Irish conditions, which is, I suppose, very important and something that we're trying to pioneer at Grassland Agro in relation to the fact that we have such unique soils. What's applicable in the US mightn't necessarily be applicable here. We're doing a lot of work with Chagas in relation to soil health, a new soil health index that's more wide-ranging. And we talked about the three pillars, really, Siobhan.
Yeah, and you had a big picture of a plough up there, John. You know, and, you know, the plough has a place in tillage. You know, we need to control our grass weeds. There's a lot of small farms in tillage. You know, the scale isn't there, maybe, and they need to get every inch of yield out there, and maybe the plough suits their system. So, it, like, you spoke about carbon. And we generally talk about carbon and mintil, but can we still plough and get that carbon built up?
Yeah, exactly. And so I suppose one of the things I was talking about this evening was that when you're in the fertiliser industry, everyone's looking for the next kind of magic nutrient that's going to fix everyone's problems, whether it's zinc or magnesium or in silicon in horticulture now, and people kind of looking for the quick fix. But really, we were trying to treat and explain carbon as a nutrient and a nutrient input. You can build it by the use of cover crops, maybe building in organic manures, using your plough in rotation to maybe deal with problems. But you can definitely. And like when we talk about organic matter and we talk about carbon in Irish tillage soils, we could be very disappointed to have a tillage soil at 3% organic matter.
Yeah.
In the US, you would be a god. Do you know?
Yeah.
You know, so it's very different, and we have to define our own soil health with the new soil health law that's coming in as well in relation to Irish context. Can't be relying on, you know, Eastern Europe where they have completely, we see it in the yields, we discount our yields, you know, when we're talking agronomy. Our soils are so unique as well. So yes, it is, and like I suppose in that photosynthetic pathway, the plant is actually putting carbon back into the soil. We have bigger yields than most other countries, and it's also putting in more carbon. So, like, it's an area of really important research and interest of ours. And it's really in vogue at the moment, isn't it, Siobhan?
Yeah, it is, absolutely. Whether we'll get paid or not is another story, John. But, I suppose, the soil underpants test, look, we said it's not scientific, but it's something, it's a good thing visually for people to do. But you were also talking about that soil, the burst test, the sea burst. So maybe explain that to us.
Yeah, so basically we're looking at more from an agronomy point of view, and basically the Solvita test is what's commonly used in research papers to look at mineralization, which is just the breaking of organic nutrients into mineral form so they can be taken up by the plant. So what we do is we use that to get an understanding of the CO2 respiration of the soil, so how much horsepower is there, how much labile nitrogen is there as well. And then we can, based on that and a couple of other soil health factors like structure, we're able to then define, you know, how much nitrogen this farmer may receive during a growing season from the background nitrogen, and then you alter your chemical nitrogen, hopefully downwards, to suit that. So it's trying to get a little bit more precise with nitrogen inputs. That's the name of the game. It's the same. The tillage side is streets ahead. You know, like, we have only one nitrogen index for grassland. That shouldn't be the case, because the potential in grassland sites is so much different. That's what we're working on with our project with Chagas and Johnstown and Moorpark and Vistamill. But in relation to, I suppose, the CO2 burst test, it's repeatable. It's done in a lab. And, like, as I was saying, and we were slagging you, and I was saying that you had Jack's underpants above at the ploughing for the minister, which he didn't deny either when I was on with him one day on the tech talks. But, like, that's brilliant, because we need that. We need to start talking, shifting soil health from, I suppose, the kind of socks and sandals to the mainstream. Do you know? Because it is our unique point of difference in Ireland.
Yeah. And, John, fertiliser figures last year showed that P and K reduced dramatically. You know, on tillage farms, I suppose, look, probably in the main, it hasn't reduced that much, but P's and K's are vital. Farmers really need to focus in on that now this year, and pH as well.
Absolutely, critical. Like, we're lucky and unlucky that we're in Killishy and Naas. A lot of maybe the catchment farms around here are going to be naturally high pH, but that presents other problems with phosphorus fixation. But, like, pH is a no-brainer, rented land or not, cheapest input is such a big one. Like, and there is this phobia, I think, especially on Connacht, or that if you go in and you spread lime, that immediately the price is either going to go up or they're going to take it back off you.
Yeah.
But, like, the relative efficiency of the nitrogen that you're spreading could be as low as 30% if you don't have good pH, P and K. So basically multiply the cost of your fertiliser by 3. And that is a staggering figure. P's and K's, yeah. Like, listen, I love speaking to the tillage farmers, because they understand the roles of the nutrients, and they've seen the deficiencies. In grass, you won't.
Yeah.
So that's really powerful that you can go. And I encourage all our team to actually go to CropBox to see a low K crop, so you can see the deficiency, and then you can make sense of it when you're on farm. And a farmer should do that as well, grassland farmers.
Yeah.
Because when they're looking at soil samples, they're just saying, for what difference does it make, really? But it's very important that we get on top of it. I think anyone maybe on the tillage side who did skimp probably felt the brunt of it as well.
Yeah.
Do you know? Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely, John. I think it's easier to keep indices where they are instead of trying to build them, and it's going to cost you a lot more in the long run if you start to try and build them. John, you've given me a bit of slagging now, so for my last question, and I know you're not going to answer it, any fertiliser prices, where's Canna at this week?
We're a class act, Siobhan. We're a class act. Fertiliser prices, I suppose, are actually tricky at the moment. Like, everything is very volatile, there's stocks in the ground. The prices look to be strong and probably continue to be strong for 3-4 months, Siobhan, unfortunately. After that, like, it's very much crystal ball, and what we've done is we've tried to insulate ourselves, so we've been buying in chunks. So, like, it's gone from a just in time. Previously, there was loads of fertiliser in the yard and there wasn't going to be much volatility and we'd have huge stocks. We don't have that now, and it's gone to a just-in-time market to kind of protect ourselves from going burst, basically, so that we don't buy too much and you're left with a load of stock and the price drops. That's putting huge pressure on factories and deliveries, and there is a little bit of a reluctance to get stock, but I wouldn't say anything's going to change for 3 months, and if you need it, I would get it, because it's all going to happen very quickly. And we've seen last year was the same thing, to know that actually supply was a big issue. You know, so that's kind of where we are. It's not a position anyone in the industry, across any of ourselves or our competitors, wants to be in, but it's tricky now for sure.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense to have that little bit in the yard that you're going to need in the start of the spring anyway. Look, John, thanks a million for talking to us.
And thanks very much to John. He went a bit quiet there at the end when he was asked on the fertiliser prices. So look, that's all for this week. Thanks a million to you for listening. Thanks, of course, to all the guests that we had on the show this week. Thanks to Claire and Jerome back at base for editing. And look, hopefully the weather holds. If it does, stay safe when you're working and keep the tillage flag flying.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.